This is episode 349 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, September the 12th, 2011.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
Why would anyone trust this government not to make a complete and utter shambolic mess of the national broadband network?
Which part of time would they like us to go back to? 1960, 1930?
Can you really give that guarantee when you don't seem to know what peak speed is? I'll tell you what it is.
Okay, great. Let's give everybody a case.
The future is here.
So now technology has caught up with reality.
Ever since Telstra was privatised, Australians have suffered.
Technology has had a huge impact on our love life.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, I'm Andrew McComb and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. Whoever thought SMS, or short messaging, would never take off, would certainly be eating their words with the stark realisation that Twitter would turn into being one of the world's most important social networking sites. The Twitter blog this week attributed some interesting facts and figures about the service, highlighting its achievements in its short five-year life. Today, 100 million active users around the globe turn to Twitter to share their thoughts and find out what's happening in the world right now. More than half of them log into Twitter each day to follow their interests. For many, getting the most out of Twitter isn't only about tweeting. 40% of users simply sign in to listen to what's happening in their world. Twitter's global reach gives a voice to people around the world and will soon support 17 different languages. The 100 million active users range from passionate early adopters to recent converts. They include a truly unified cross-section of the world's population, from leaders to sporting legends, entertainers, and humanitarians. 35 global heads of state use Twitter as a primary way to communicate with their constituencies, which also includes Australia's Prime Minister, Julia Gillard. In the United States, frequent tweeters include every cabinet agency, 84% of state governors, and every major candidate for president. More than 40% of the top global religious leaders are on Twitter, including the Dalai Lama and even the Pope, who sent his first tweet in June. Many professional sporting players are active on Twitter too. Every team in the NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL and MLS tweet, as do cricket players in India, European football stars and many other celebrated athletes from around the world. Fans and commentators join in for some of the most colourful conversations on Twitter. Additionally, over 99% of America's top 200 non-profit organisations are also on Twitter. 87% of Billboard's top 100 musicians of 2010 are active on the social networking site, connecting them with fans to engage their audience. Each of the top 50 Nielsen-rated TV shows are represented on Twitter, and who doesn't love a daily dose of hilarity from their favourite comedians such as Will Anderson, Dave Hughes, and the master of comedy, John Cleese? Major media outlets actively use Twitter to support their reporting efforts. Reporters share stories and photos from the front lines. Ordinary people break news and give views on what others might miss, like the now famous space shuttle image that was retweeted over 2,300 times and the first photo of the United States airplane that landed in the Hudson River in 2009. Twitter can be consumed on anything these days, from home computers to your favourite smartphone or iGadget.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Solar parity is here, but do you know what it is? Telstra rolls out IPv6 for businesses and government. Councils lobby NBN Co. for NBN preferences. And Adam Turner takes a look at telco confusopoly. As well, Dr. Ron is back with the odd spot that even with all of Google's technology, they can't avoid the Aussie prankster. First up, though, here's Dr. Ron with this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, telcos are read the Riot Act by the ACMA. Cybercrime now costs Australians over $4.5 billion. Carol Bartz is replaced as CEO of search giant Yahoo. Samsung postpones the rollout of its latest tablet computer. And the price of privately generated solar electricity now hits parity with grid power. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Telecommunications companies have been put on notice by the Australian Communications and Media Authority. Shape up or face more stringent regulation. High levels of complaints have prompted the ACMA to put telcos on notice. After an 18-month inquiry into customer service, the ACMA says that telcos must make it easier for subscribers to understand their accounts, compare plans, and receive warnings when call minutes are running out or data limits are approaching. The ABC reported on Friday that customers had made 60,000 new complaints to the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman in the first quarter of 2011, a rise of 40% from the previous year. Claire O'Reilly is the project manager of the ACMA's Reconnecting the Customer Inquiry Task Force. Ms. O'Reilly spoke on ABC Radio last week.
Industry has agreed to disclose the cost of a two-minute call to another mobile in Australia, and that's using the highest rate charged under that plan plus flag four. So it'll be the cost of a two-minute call, the cost of sending a standard text message, and the cost of downloading 1 megabyte of data in Australia.
The ACMA has told the telco industry's Communications Alliance that it has 5 months to improve complaints handling before the ACMA considers regulatory changes to improve processes for subscribers. Consumer groups are reportedly disappointed with the ACMA's decision, saying that more should be done to bring telcos into line. Cybercrime now costs Australians in excess of $4.5 billion annually. A study commissioned by Norton Symantec found that $1.8 billion had been lost from online fraud and identity theft, with a follow-on $2.8 billion in lost productivity and associated costs. Norton surveyed the experiences of 20,000 people in 24 countries, including 800 people in Australia. The study put the global cost of cybercrime at $388 billion last year. The most common form of cybercrime was related to computers infected with viruses and malware, followed by credit card fraud and illegal access to social network accounts. The director of the Centre for Internet Safety at the University of Canberra, Alastair McGibbon, spoke on ABC Radio last week. Mr. McGibbon said he was not surprised by the study's findings.
The report shows that a very large number of people, over 50%, don't actually have antivirus and firewalls on their endpoints on their computers. We have fallen into a mantra online in particular that says it's all about the end user changing their behaviour. And frankly, there's no other place in society where we would just keep blaming the victim and blaming the end user.
Norton Internet Safety Advocate Ms. Marianne Merritt said that computer users should keep their security software up to date and use a password on mobile devices in the event that phones are lost or stolen. The CEO of search giant Yahoo, Ms. Carol Bartz, has been sacked by the board. Ms. Bartz has been CEO of Yahoo since January 2009 in what has been described as a sometimes tumultuous tenure. Ms. Bartz reportedly received a call last week from Chairman of the Board, Mr. Roy Bostock, who publicly thanked Ms. Bartz for her service to Yahoo during a critical time of transition in the company's history. Yahoo News reported that the company's share price, $12.91, is virtually unchanged since Ms. Bartz took over as CEO. The company's shares jumped 81 cents, or 6%, to $13.72 in after-hours trading on Tuesday, indicative of investor approval. The board of directors appointed Mr. Timothy Morse as interim chief executive officer after Ms. Bartz's dismissal. Ms. Bartz told the Wall Street Journal that she was disappointed in effectively being fired by phone call and made comments to the effect that she was professionally disappointed with Mr. Bostock. Consumer electronics manufacturer Samsung has postponed the deployment of its new tablet computer owing to an ongoing patent dispute with rival Apple. Samsung and Apple are currently embroiled in 19 lawsuits in 12 courts in 9 countries around the world. Apple has accused Samsung of copying its iPhone and iPad user interfaces and packaging. The launch of the new 7-inch Galaxy Tab 10.1 has been delayed in Australia while the matter is decided in the federal court. The launch was originally scheduled for Thursday, the 11th of August, with Samsung describing the device as the world's thinnest mobile tablet. Samsung, in a statement, said that the company will announce a new date for the Galaxy Tab 10.1 media launch as soon as practicable, and that a mutual agreement had been reached with Apple so the device would not be sold in Australia until a decision had been made by the federal court. And the price of do-it-yourself electricity generation has now reached parity with the cost of coal-generated grid power, according to the Photovoltaic Association. Spokeswoman for the association, Dr. Muriel Watt, says that for the first time, solar power generated by photovoltaic cells on Australian rooftops has become so cheap and efficient that they now produce electricity for the same price that's charged by the electricity grid. This phenomenon, referred to in the industry as grid parity, means it makes good economic sense to install solar panels on private houses. Dr. Watt attributed grid parity in Australia to rapid reductions in the costs of production of solar cells. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Now, I'd like to talk about Optus.
I'm remembering conversations I didn't have.
I'd like to point out I do not want a Google Plus invite.
You were conscious. It did happen.
It was conscious.
It did happen.
Nothing to do with litigation.
It's a con job by the entire industry to cause confusion and doubt and uncertainty in the marketplace.
I think a lot of people did give them shtick.
Wow, he's the stereotypical everything you'd expect to see of a...
Does he look like a business type? He doesn't look like a PC, does he?
Well, he didn't have a...
That's all right. We can fix this in post.
Nonetheless...
It's insecure.
Yes.
Doesn't like the way it looks in jeans.
The iPhone, next iPhone's been sitting on Steve Jobs' desk for a long time.
There's some very nice bars in Mountain View.
Like any other software, every now and then there's a flaw that can be exploited, and that's what's happened here.
You have been hacked in Turkish. Oh, I can't do Turkish.
They make shiny things.
Oh, then you'd have them, wouldn't you? Yeah.
That's why we have SSL certificates that name the site.
I'm surprised they don't stand out the front healing lepers. It is that.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And I think that's our cue for this evening. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here with two of the best in front of me. Dr. Graham, who's going to try and find a microphone. Sorry, was there something happening over here that you were keen to see?
No, I was just checking the all-important audio recorders.
You think my buttons are in the wrong spot? No, just checking they're all recording.
Just double-checking everything.
Oh, that's a good idea. Dr. Ron, welcome back.
Hello, Andrew. Thank you.
Yes.
Good to be back.
Ah, yes, we missed you last time. But anyway, just to keep everyone on our toes, I got this text just a few moments ago. Well, actually, no, it was over an hour ago. It says...
I know who this is from. It's from someone who's absent tonight, I bet.
Yes, the person who normally sits in the chair there next to you. But
yes.
It says, I don't think I'll be able to make it tonight. Deadline tomorrow, and I lost a whole day's work today because I'm a with saving.
I had a note on a note here to ask Lena at the start of the program, did you forget to click save today? And Graham will verify that's actually written in black and white on
yes,
the show notes.
Yes,
here.
It is. Yeah. I can verify that.
Yeah. So is this because she's an Apple user that she assumes that it automatically does things?
Does the
for
Apple
her?
World not have autosave?
Well, I don't know.
Apparently not.
I'm not particularly, I won't go any there. Yes, I don't know.
More likely, as Lena suggested, their user error, I think, is the politically correct term.
User error.
The one she used.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Anyway, Lena's not in this evening because she broke her nail on
incompetent
the control S
computer
key.
User.
The yep. Apple S key. She's manicured her nails or something. I don't know. Anyway, what an interesting week it's been.
I felt sorry for her when I saw her tweet. I thought, no.
Oh, I haven't been across the Twitterverse today. Why? What did she tweet?
Oh, it was...
Is that where
words,
you got prompted for your...
It was words to that effect.
Was it?
That were in your text message only. Much, much worse.
Really?
Yeah, there was a...
She's more sedate for my text, is she?
Yeah, she is. There was a tweet which said something like, uh-oh, I hope I haven't just lost the whole day's work. And then there was an agonising couple of minutes where there was silence from the panellist formerly known as Van Deventer. And then she explained, yes, everybody, wherever you are right now in the world, if you're near a save button, just click it.
Yeah, good. We have a wonderful device, one of our editing systems, the Avid system, which is called the Attic. And it forces autosaves every few minutes so that if you accidentally lose power, push the wrong button, tempests, floods, whatever.
You've only lost
up to 15 minutes worth of work.
But does that slow the system down? Is it always...
No. It's very quick. We're only writing, you know, not massive files with lots of images in it or anything like that. It's just an in-out sort of text file, really.
Because if you're not on a very powerful computer, that can be annoying. You can be typing away and suddenly this little progress button in the bottom, it says, you know, Word is auto-saving, blah, blah, blah. And you go, oh, come on, computer. Stop auto-saving. Everything hangs for a few moments.
No, our auto-saves aren't that. The biggest problem we have is when the drives go to sleep and you have to wait for a drive to spin up.
Yeah, that's frustrating too.
Yeah, but other than that, no. All good. Anyway, what a week it's been.
Graham, you've got Lena's Twitter stream there in front of you.
Oh, don't read that out. We'll be off the air in a fraction of a moment.
And would I...
Well, sanitise it, please.
What I find extraordinary about... I've been reading it for probably the 30 seconds since you mentioned it before. And now at the top of the... And it took me time to open it from the time when you mentioned it. And now in just that time... I've got a little note at the top of my screen that says 16 new tweets. Now,
oh, really?
This is the rate that this person tweets at.
Well, she's got time to tweet, but she can't come up to the radio station tonight. That's, yeah.
All right.
She's prolific. Anyway, what else has been happening this week, Dr. Ryan? There's been lots of interesting things in the news. I must admit, I went to the movies, if I can start this evening before we do Coro.
Yeah, please do.
My Coro. I went to the movies on the over the course of the weekend, and I watched a bit of television,
What did you see at the movies?
Well, I saw a film which I was a tad disappointed in. It was one which was by people who should have known better.
This doesn't surprise me. I walked past a movie theatre on the weekend and had a look at what was on and decided to go home.
Yeah, well, you probably did the right thing. I went and saw, what do they call it? Cowboys and Aliens.
Oh, yeah, that was the one the person I was with wanted to see. Oh.
We've all been looking forward to that coming out, though. We thought it would be a good movie.
Well,
that strikes you as being a promising concept, does it?
Oh, absolutely. It sounds awesome. How could you possibly go wrong? Cowboys and Aliens, come on.
Can I just elaborate on that, Dr. How can you possibly go wrong when you've got Steven Spielberg as an executive producer, Ron Howard, there's a Freudian slip for you.
Yes, Ron
Howard. Ronnie Howard's one of the directors.
And Clint Eastwood's in, isn't he?
No,
I'm making it up as I go along.
You are now.
Who's the one of the main actors in it?
Mr. Bond.
Oh, yes, of course.
Come on, you can do it.
I can't remember the actor's name. The latest Bond.
Yeah. Well, 20 questions. We'll come back to that afterwards. Okay. Harrison Ford is in it.
That's right. Yep.
I can't think of a name out of Tron is also in it. Anyway, the bottom line is last chance. You're not going to have a go?
No.
Starts with D. Daniel Boone was a man.
No, I can't remember.
C. Daniel C. Daniel Craig.
There you go.
He's in it as well. So you sort of figure that it's got to be half decent. But anyway, like the Blue Monkey film, the story was a bit lacking, and I was hoping that there's going to be some nice visual effects or something like that to go and have a look at, but even still, they cheated there. Everything was so goddamn fast that you couldn't tell if it was a good visual effect or not.
Oh, okay.
You know, things jump on things and run around. It was very, very fast. The print quality that I saw at our local very large cinema chain was a bit grainy and a very interesting sort of grade that they had on it. Oh, and I also had an experience...
Up in your local village area?
Yes, it was in a Knox village area.
Mm-hmm.
They had real problems with the sound too. Not that it was the film's problem. I think it was more village's problem. They chose to... you know the rock and roll music or that really low-level music they play when you walk into the cinema when there's nothing on the screen?
Yeah. Yep.
We had that right up till the film. So the trailer had just someone playing guitar and...
Oh, that's frustrating.
It was one of those really good, come on, village, lift your game. Sort of like, if you don't fix it in the next few minutes, there's going to be a revolution here, because the cinema's quite full on a Sunday afternoon, as you'd expect.
Mm.
Anyway, to summarise it, the film was all right. Excuse me. Storyline, like the Blue Monkeys, was just sadly lacking. You know, I won't go into it on the radio in case people want to listen to it, but it was just, you know, they relied too much on the big names in the film, and the film was just a fraction too long, I thought. Bit slow to start with and all that, but that was just me. But from the reason I'm talking about it on the radio, I was quite disappointed in the technology.
118 minutes.
Yeah, that's a long time for a film that drags a bit.
Mm.
Yeah. And then on the other side of the coin, I've been watching television. I've given up on some local content produced and stuff like that. So as you've probably... I'm a big Doctor Who fan, and I watched two episodes back to back. And can I just say that... the script writing in that program leaves everything I've seen out of Hollywood for dead recently. It's just absolutely amazing, the story that comes up.
Now, were the episodes you watched written by Moffat?
Yes.
Yeah, well, that doesn't surprise me. He has very rapidly joined an elite group in my mind.
Yes, he has.
You know, alongside Douglas Adams and a couple of others, and Stephen Moffat seems to be a really great writer.
There is an episode coming up which you will see this Saturday night on ABC television, and it's called The Girl Who Waited. And it's one of those ones where you've got two time streams running together and it does your head in. It's an amazing... I'm not going to say any more than that. Cinematography, fantastic. Production quality, brilliant. Script writing over the top. It's just fantastic sort of stuff. And I can't wait to see the new series of Sherlock, which he is also writing.
Absolutely, yes. The previous series of Sherlock was incredible.
Yeah. So if he ever chose to move to Hollywood to write stuff, I reckon Hollywood might actually learn a few things from his great skill. But anyway...
Hollywood's had opportunities to learn from people of his caliber before and has failed... Not mentioning any Joss Whedons in particular.
So your advice next week, Andrew, would be don't go to the cinemas to see Cowboys and Aliens. Stay home and watch Doctor Who.
You'll get much better bang for your buck out of some of the offshore, the British stuff. I've discovered a new sitcom on the weekend too, which I can't go into on the radio for obvious reasons. But anyway, there's great stuff out there to be watched.
Well, you've had a busy week.
Well, yeah, I've had the nurse's hat on. I've got one that needs a bit of attention to detail, so I've been doing that. You got some coro there, Dr. Roy?
I've got plenty of correspondence. And firstly, I've just got a bit of a follow-up. I listened to last week's episode, which was very entertaining on the pod, by the way, so well done, guys. And Graham was saying there were funny things sent in the mail. He got a printer delivered in the mail. You were saying that last week.
Yes, and the post office that I went to said, no, this isn't the biggest or the strangest we've had. They mentioned that they'd once had someone send a refrigerator by mail.
I'm glad you said that, Graham, because it just so happens I was sitting in the Tech Talk Radio headquarters last week.
What happened?
And guess what Andrew ordered and was subsequently delivered by mail?
I hate to think.
A refrigerator.
A refrigerator. You idiot. Can you imagine the poor postman?
I don't have to imagine. People, I was sitting there when he brought it in.
People overseas probably are not familiar with the way the post works, but the post is delivered by postal delivery people on little tiny underpowered Japanese motorcicles.
With little bicycles on the back. Sometimes even.
Yeah. They go in pairs in our area now.
They go in pairs. Like parking inspectors. I'm not surprised with you around ordering refrigerators.
Yes. No, a bit all seriousness. It's a great way to buy things these days. Shop
it
online.
Is. Oh, yeah.
It's a damn sight cheaper than going down to your...
Hang on a minute. Well, yeah, just before you go on, I'm going to say it again like I did last week. Mr. Harvey, Jerry Harvey, this is the bit of the show you need to listen to. It's really good ordering stuff online, Andrew.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, it's so much more efficient and cost-effective than going down to your Hardley Norman shop.
Yeah.
And standing around and procrastinating with a salesperson who's...
Yeah, but one
who
of the,
expects you to haggle and then looks terrified at you when you say, no, that's my best rate.
But again, listen up, Australian retailers. One of the critical features of ordering online is that someone comes and delivers it to your house or to your workplace. Is that right?
Within a day or two.
Yeah. Even if it's a refrigerator.
Including a refrigerator.
It was very amusing, especially since it was discussed last week.
Only one downside to it.
What was the downside?
Well, it didn't have any beer in it because we wanted it for a new beer fridge, you see. So
oh, I see.
Had to go out and stock it up. I said, where's the beer? He said, no, don't look at me.
The fridge didn't come with beer in it?
No, it didn't.
It would seem to be an oversight.
It's not very Australian, is it?
No. Did you know Australians invented the fridge?
Yes, it's an Australian invention.
It is. That's one thing we've given the world. Is a refrigerator.
Refrigeration, yeah. Yep.
Born out of the cool guard, he's safe and all that sort of stuff.
That's right, and the first thing ever put in it was
not
beer.
Not just the fridge, that technology of having a motor, compressed gases, and then that heat exchange concept, which is not just a refrigerator, but that's also how air conditioners work. So, that's the technology that, came out of our South Australian inventor, wasn't it?
I think so.
I remember.
Yeah.
Correspondence this week, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is where to send it. Mark, via direct email actually to Dr. Ron, says, hi Ron, long time between messages. I'm a very recent user of Twitter. I had avoided it previously because it appeared to be a lot of nonsensical children talking about very little at all. Well, Lena's not in tonight. She's attending to some difficulties at home with her autosave.
Why don't you immediately think of Lena?
That all changed recently, says Mark, when I wanted support for something from overseas, and their preferred method of support was via Twitter, not email. So I joined, got the necessary support, using the original Twitter application for Windows, says Mark, and all was well with the world. Then one morning, during my commute via train, I was searching for a Twitter client for my iPad, original day of issue 16GB Wi-Fi only model, if you don't mind. And one of the recommended apps was Flipboard. I think Lena has used Flipboard. Have you used Flipboard?
Yeah, we've got Flipboard on the iPad. Yes, it's wonderful. It's a great aggregator.
A great little news aggregator. The name seemed familiar, and sure enough, it was something that I had installed early on to read RSS feeds, as I recall, but I wasn't impressed and I archived the app. Imagine my surprise when I selected a few tech people to follow to find with Flipboard, you didn't just get the maximum 140 characters of a tweet, but got the blog article or similar all presented like a tech zine, like a technical magazine. I have avoided the whole social media business up till now, but having got my feet wet, I'm now wondering about Google Plus, and my query is this. Graham's seen it coming. If some kind person, hint, were to extend an invitation, and yes, Mark, you've got your invitation, and he's joined up, so that's terrific. Keep up the good work, he says. I haven't missed a podcast since you started them. Regards, Mark. So that's nice.
That's a few. This is episode 349. Did you know?
We're nearly at 350.
Yes. 350 next week.
That's a lot of episodes.
It is. Should we go home now?
It's a ludicrous amount of episodes.
How many do we have to do before we've served our sentence?
It's a lot of pizzas, isn't it?
P. Topsa via the feedback form. P. Topsa. That's how I'm pronouncing it. Okay. I'm sticking with that. Hey, guys. Love the show. Last week you talked about powering your phones by walking.
Yes.
Well, how about powering your phone or iPod with this solar-powered bikini?
Oh, you got pictures?
Yes.
That's not fair for the listeners. Are you going to share that with the tweet?
I will. It's going to be in the show notes. There's a link there to a solar-powered bikini. He says, no need to worry, or she says, no need to worry about your iPod running out of juice. The solar-powered bikini will charge your favourite gadgets while you soak up the rays at the beach.
Now, surely one of the critical features of a bikini is that it should be as small as possible. Whereas one of the critical features of a solar array is that it should use the maximum area available.
Well, there's a bit of a conflict there. I hear there's a conflict of interest here
between the charging facilities and the other features of a bikini.
Well, the manufacturers of this bikini, I think, have reached a happy medium.
You're talking to a man who wears a Wi-Fi device in his T-shirt.
Correct. The bikini looks like it's made exclusively out of solar cells. It looks like...
Have you got a picture of it here?
Oh, not here, but I've got a link. And I'll put the link in the show notes. It looks like 50 or 60 solar cells will stitch together. It's very clever.
Is it like that woman who went to those Academy Awards with credit cards all stitched together? I'm just trying to imagine it in my mind.
Something similar. It looks like something Lady Gaga would wear.
Oh, dear. She doesn't wear much. That's the problem.
Yes. That's why it's a bikini. P-Topsa, thank you for the contribution. We'll pop the link in the show notes there. Jack via...
Just before you move on, show notes that we refer to occasionally are on the forum at forum.techtalkradio.com.au. And that's a great place to go and search. If you think there's been a mention on the show or an odd spot or something that's been mentioned like this where you want to find out where the link is, the show notes are probably the best place to go. Go to the forum. You don't even have to sign up. You can search the forum without even signing up.
Yep.
And, find the link you need.
There's a forum bit there called Recent Shows, and you'll see the notes.
That's right, yeah.
Jack via Twitter says, in response to me, a tweet by me saying I had NextG coverage on the weekend in regional Victoria everywhere I needed it, Jack said, only one place I know that doesn't get NextG, my place. I asked Jack where he was. He said, South Gippsland, Victoria. Works most places in my area, except my house. Jack, my advice would be to let Telstra know. There might be a fault. Or they might say, yeah, we know where you live and we've got plans to expand or put more cells in nearby. Let them know that it's not
good
where you need it.
Ring it through and let them know. We had a very similar situation. We, as some of you may know, have a little bit of land up north, and yes, similar problems. And it's sort of with a few calls to the right people and stuff like that, and a bit of waiting. In fact, a lot of waiting. Next thing you know, look at that service.
If you've got neighbours or other people that live in the area that are also having the same trouble, get them all to ring up, because the more comments they get about people who'd like to use the service, the more likely it is they're going to do something about it.
Yep. If they don't know that there's a problem there, Jack, then they won't fix it.
Just, don't ring up and get all aggro about it. Just, politely put in a request for a bit of a network upgrade in your area.
And last but certainly not least, Matt via the Tech Talk Radio feedback form says, to Graham.
Oh,
I haven't heard the term wallopers for years.
Oh, I saw this one come in.
You used it on the show last week. My dad used to use it a lot when we would head up north along the Hume Highway on a family safari.
The wallopers.
Thanks for keeping alive a very Australian colloquialism. Cheers, Matt. And that's all the feedback this week, Andrew. The address to send it is feedback.
Very briefly, for those who don't know what wallopers are.
Rozzers.
Rozzers.
Yep. Constabulary.
That's the one, the police.
Those whom have things that check your speed on highways. Those people.
At techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
On the very front of the Tech Talk Radio website, at this very point in time, it won't be there for much longer, but it is there right now, is a video of how fast Windows 8 boots. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
You should go and have a look. The new version of Windows 8, which is being touted for show and tell, I believe, this week, in California.
Yes, I've been watching for the release.
Yes, I think we all have.
I cannot wait.
I've got a machine standing by to take your download.
I have a virtual machine standing by. There's a reason I've got 8 gig of memory in this laptop.
Yeah, well, the good thing Microsoft have done is there's two versions. Well, there's one version, but there's two GUIs for Windows 8. One is the very quick boot up, which looks not unlike a tablet operating system, which you might be familiar with Phone 7, that sort of look and feel. And then you've got your traditional version of Windows 8, which looks like Windows 7, a bit more of a, you know,
a desktop-y environment.
Yeah, a bit more conservative than the average table thing. But anyway, they were spruiking their wares during the course of the week, and the boot-up time is actually faster than the mobile phone 7 time. It boots in the fraction of a second from plugging a battery into the laptop that this girl was demonstrating on to being ready to use the desktop. So it's worth a look, techtalkradio.com.au. It's there now. It might not be there for much longer. They don't hang around on the front page.
See, we're all getting spoiled by smartphones because we pick them up and we hit the power button and bang, it's on and it's working and it's ready to go.
Is it really?
Well, mine usually is. Isn't yours?
It still takes quite a little while to get through all its processes.
Oh, from a cold start,
yeah,
do you mean?
Yeah,
from a cold start, yeah. Oh, you're right, yeah. Now, mine takes a couple of minutes, but I mean, if you've got the phone and it's on,
oh, yeah,
and the screen's off, you just tap the power button and bang, it's on, ready to go.
Yeah.
Unless
you use a lot of different applications in which you tap the power button and wait a couple of seconds because it's run out of memory, which is why you need to reboot them once every week.
And clear the... What did I have to do, Andrew? I had to clear the core log on my HTC.
Oh, yes, you did. Don't ever keep collecting SMSs MMSs.
That's right. I had 6 months worth of messages.
They go somewhere, and that somewhere grinds your phone to a halt if you don't delete them on a semi-regular basis.
Is that what's happening?
Why? Is that what's happening to yours?
Well, it might be. I don't know.
Yeah. I think we were going through Dr. Ron's phone one night, and I said, how come you got 45 meg in SMSs? Thinking about it, that's a hell of a lot of SMSs.
It is, especially when they're just little 160-character text messages.
Yeah. So, yes, blew it away. Phone booted fine and behaved as planned.
But all my text messages.
Well, there are services which you can archive them to if you really do want to keep all your text messages and stuff like that. So,
all right, when can we get access to Windows 8 to have a play with it?
Yeah, I want the beta.
It's being released, or shown, not released, it's being shown to the world in California this week at the Build conference.
And the scuttlebutt is that the beta will be released at the same time, so we'll be able to have a play with it.
Yes, it'll be quite interesting to see how that, and of course, like all good tech things, it happens probably tomorrow, knowing our luck, and we'll have to wait a week before we can talk about it, but that's all right. It'll give us a chance to actually load it up and have a bit of a play with it if the rumours do come true and we do manage to actually get hold of a copy of it during the course of the week. There's some interesting things that's going to happen with it, new gadgets, new features, but I guess the good thing about it is that we've got both GUIs available to us if you want to brazenly go into the future and...
so we don't have to use that one I've been complaining about.
No, that's true. That's true. So, yeah, anyway, that was a bit of interesting thing this week.
Exciting.
It is exciting.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, it'll be good to see. Now, in the news, Dr. Ron, you talked about solar, now the same price as grid electricity. Now, I thought this is pretty impressive. I thought it'd be a few more years off yet before the price of putting stuff on your roof would be equivalent to that of buying it from the grid, but obviously not so. I know Victoria and New South Wales in particular have put up their electricity prices substantially over the last little bit, which has obviously pushed the pushed that barrier ever so closer together.
And the price of the technology has come down at the same time. So
that, yeah,
so
combining
they've
that
sort of met in the middle.
And also, I noticed during the course of the week, I think I heard that the Victorian government, you know, he can sell electricity back into the grid.
You can.
People might not understand that. What you can do is you...
It's your
excess. Sometimes you generate more electricity than you're using.
Not at our house.
Even... Well, no, but minute to minute you might. While you're at work and the kids are at school and, you know, not much is happening.
I wish.
in the middle of the day when the sun's shining brightly, you might find that you're generating more than you're using, even just over that time. And at other times, you don't generate as much as you're using. But instead of storing that in a battery and having to retrieve it later, what you can do is you can
flog it to the neighbours.
You can flog it back to the power company. So you're sending power out through that cable that comes into your house instead of in through it. And, yeah, the grid will pay you for that.
Well, it's a concept that I think a lot of electricity companies are fearing at the moment because...
I don't see why. It'll help them manage their network. They won't have to keep upgrading the big feed lines between town and the generators.
I can see why. Profits, my friend.
Yeah, less
profits.
Revenue, that's the issue.
Profits. When there's a viable alternative...
But they're still buying power and selling power.
Yeah, they're still buying it at a lesser rate than they're actually selling it for. So you'd think they'd still be ahead, wouldn't you?
Anyway, in Victoria, it went from 50 cents. Now, don't quote me on this. I could be wrong. I remember I was discussing this at some 50 cents per kilowatt hour down to 25 cents per kilowatt hour pushed back into the grid. And it's still, in Victoria, it's one of the highest prices paid for generating and contributing to the grid. And I think second is either New South Wales or South Australia. And that's off the top of my head, but don't quote me on
any of those figures. But it's a massive fall from what it used to be.
Yes, it is coming down.
Because originally the government said, no, you have to pay a fair bit above the odds for this solar power because it's environmentally less harmful than the digging up Gippsland and burning it.
Yes, you're talking about the coal-fired power stations in Victoria.
That's right.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm being Victorian-centric. I'm sorry.
If you're interested in solar power... The consumer advocacy website Choice has got a solar panels buyer guide, which is what you need. You need someone independent, a consumer advocacy type organisation to help you with this because there's a lot of confusing jargon in this whole solar business. The guide will tell you at Choice what to consider when you're choosing a solar panel system, where to find an installer or designer, how to calculate your system's approximate payback time, which is important. It tells you all about government rebates and incentives, how to avoid dodgy imports, and what the feed-in tariff is, which is what Graham was explaining, how much you'll be paid for your electricity that your panels produce.
Yes, it's quite a good concept, really. It's good all round for the environment, for everybody. And if we're getting to a point where it's now cost-effective to generate your own electricity, why wouldn't you? Now, apparently Australia is one of the first countries in the world to reach this grid parity. Which means either our electricity is incredibly expensive.
Yeah, that's probably the reason.
Which is probably the reason behind it, yeah.
But it might be that some of our costs of generation of electricity are a bit lower than in some other places.
I don't know.
Maybe our panels are a little bit more efficient because of our location on the globe. We get a lot of sunlight. You wouldn't necessarily be able to do well out of installing solar panels on your roof in Norway, for example.
Well, no, that's true, but you also take into consideration other forms of electricity generation. Here we use traditional forms or carbon-based forms, not nuclear, which a lot of other countries, especially in Europe and America, tend to use. And I guess they're a cheaper form of generation, but unfortunately their risks outweigh their benefits, I would have thought, as been, what's happened in Japan of recent times. So,
I think that's a bit of a furphy, but never
really?
Mind.
Would it not be cheaper to generate nuclear than it would be to do coal and sort of stuff? Certainly cleaner, but what would it be? I don't know. I'm just putting it out there. You don't think?
I'm thinking you might be overstating the risks of nuclear, even despite what's happened in Japan.
Okay.
That was my point.
Okay, cool. Anyway, solar panels, way to go. Have you driven around the streets lately? There's a lot of houses with solar panels on.
You're seeing more and more these days, aren't you?
And I'd like a transitional way to do it. I think it'd be really good if we could actually... And I don't know whether economically this makes sense or not, but to actually do like your electricity, your lighting first, the roof circuits, cut them over in stage one of your, putting the batteries under the house and getting the inverter and the panels and all that sort of stuff. And of course, I would have thought
Why does it matter?
Well, it's just cost effective. You don't have to, if it's $5,000 to do the whole house, you could go $2,500 and get the lights done first. And then,
but ultimately, you're still using a combination of grid power and solar power anyway.
But you wouldn't you?
Yeah, that's right. So you may as well just have that balance be achieved at the switchboard.
Okay. You do your $5,000 and $2,000. Anyway. All right. Point taken.
The costs are interesting. Choice also said until recently the standard 1 kilowatt solar panel system, including installation, was around $10,000.
Pricey.
Before the solar credit rebates. And a 2 kilowatt system was about $20,000. After the rebates, the costs were brought down to around $6,000 to $7,000 for a 1 kilowatt system.
Can I just say, a 2,000 or 2 kilowatt, or the unit of measure that you're talking about is what this system will generate on an hourly basis. So you can consume 1 kilowatt or 1,000 watts in an hour.
Okay,
under ideal conditions, presumably.
Presumably.
So don't load the fridge up too much when you're. Well, you need to take a bit from the grid.
Yeah, well, that's right. You'll have to top up from the grid what you
can't
generate yourself.
So when you're not using that electricity, it stores it all in batteries for later use, or, as Graham says, puts it back into the grid.
If your batteries are topped up and your batteries are good, it can feed it back. Yeah. However, lately, says Choice, we're seeing systems available for under $3,000 after the solar credits from companies such as Origin Energy, which also offers an interest-free repayment plan. So get some independent, have a look at some independent reviews, get some independent advice, because, yep, people will tell you all sorts of stuff.
Very good. All right. Other things that happened during the course of the week. You know this supermarket stuff that's happening at the moment for telcos, as in we were talking about the ACCC introducing supermarket or unit pricing for telecommunications carriers?
Yes, so we could compare apples with apples,
yes,
as the expression goes.
Yes. Adam Turner, who is a regular on our program, doesn't seem to think that it would be all that successful. Dr. Ron, do you have an opinion on unit pricing for mobile phone communications or mobile communications in general?
I can't see why it wouldn't be successful. I think it's the...
I can.
Can you?
Yep, because the phone companies, particularly the more powerful phone companies, the most obvious of which being Telstra, will do every single thing they can to subvert it.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, it's 100%.
It's in their interest to keep the consumer confused.
But if they were forced to do it and do it properly, I can't see that it would be anything other than helpful to the consumer.
Yeah, do you reckon anyone in this country has got the guts to force them to do it?
That's the question, isn't it?
Well, our consumer watchdog is trying to lift their game, as in lift the telco's game. Whether that's to be seen or not will be yet to be seen. But the caps,
referring to the ACCC, yeah, in this case, yes, the Australian caps, Competition and Consumer Commission.
That's them. The caps have always been a device to erode the true value of what you're paying for, because we've been used to caps for so long. They subsidise handsets. They hide things. They hide all sorts of, you know, the flag folly thing, all that sort of stuff, which traditionally, yep. Remember your old home phone? You used to think, go back 20 years or so, I'm going to make an STD call and I can talk for, you knew the figures.
45 cents a minute.
That's right. Beeper used to say 45 cents a minute.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. You hear that in mobile phones? No, you don't.
And when what you hear on mobile phones is you pay $30 and you get $599 of value, which is absolutely absurd.
It's meaningless.
It's completely absurd.
Absolutely meaningless. So let's try and put that back. The only thing I can think of is talk time. But there's problems with that too, as Adam Turner is about to tell us.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
People shopping for a new phone and plan are confused, stressed, frustrated and suffering from information overload, according to a new research from Deakin University. Worse yet, they find it difficult to get honest answers from the telcos. Call me cynical, but I think that's exactly what the telcos are aiming for, to bamboozle shoppers so they can't make an informed decision. A Deakin study, in conjunction with the Australian Communications Consumer Action Network, followed 517 shoppers in their quest to find the best phone deal. It concluded that consumers consistently found it difficult to get straight answers from the telcos, either pre-sale, at point of sale, or post-sale, and they actually felt that the sector relies on information overload as part of its business model. In other words, the telcos deliberately baffle us with BS. Now, the study was released as part of ACAN's national conference, which ran in Sydney last week. Not surprisingly, the study's recommendations support ACAN's call for a ban on confusing terms such as free, cap, unlimited and no exclusions, because they generally don't mean what we think they mean. After years of deliberately misleading customers, Australia's telcos are now lifting their game, drafting a Communications Alliance Telecommunications Consumer Protection Code, which will soon be released for public comment. It's not that the telcos have willingly decided to mend their ways, rather it's that the government consumer watchdog is threatening to crack down on the shonky practices. Customer complaints have soared in recent years and the Australian Communications and Media Authority is set to act. The long list of points in the Telecommunications Consumer Protection Code reads like the pleas of your cheating ex who's come crawling back for forgiveness and promises to change. Hand on heart, Australia's telcos promise to strengthen controls on advertising content and using words such as free, to stop using the word cap, to give us a summary of offer prior to postpaid services, including unit pricing and clear details explaining the fine print, to improve spend management tools so we know how much we've spent, and to tighten the deadlines for handling our complaints. The telcos might be promising to change their cheating ways, but forgiveness needs to be earned, and I'm not sure we're ready to kiss and make up just yet.
Of that long list of promises, the one that really caught my attention was unit-based pricing. Now, unit pricing might work well in the supermarket, but when choosing phone plans, you're not comparing apples with apples. Unit pricing in the supermarket generally tells you how much you're paying for 100 grams, so it's easy to compare different products. The telcos think they can win us over by applying the same concept to phone plans, but it will never work due to all the details in the fine print. Unit pricing sounds like a good idea, but unfortunately only add to the confusion because shopping for phone plans isn't like shopping for groceries. Unit pricing works in the supermarket because we all agree that 100 grams is 100 grams. But this isn't the case with phone plans because very few telcos calculate your bill by simply charging your fixed rate per minute. Some charge a flag fall, for example 30 cents when the call is answered before you even start talking. Then they start the meter. You might pay per second or perhaps in 30 second or 60 second blocks. Telcos can also vary the call rate and flag fall depending on your cap, so you never really know what you're getting for your money. So when you hear details of something like $1,000 worth of calls for $49, it's meaningless unless you know how much you're actually paying per call. The confusion doesn't stop here. If you're comparing phone deals, you also need to allow for the SMS rate, plus the fee for checking your voicemail. Then there are bonuses such as free calls or texts at certain times, or to certain phones, maybe to other family members or phones on the same network. And we haven't even touched on data. Telcos charge different rates for data depending on your plan and whether it's prepaid or postpaid. Some of them, like Optus, even charge in 10 meg blocks. So it's pretty clear that unit pricing will be useless unless every telco agrees to scrap all this fine print and bill you the same way. Confused yet? That's why they call it a confusopoly, and that's what the telcos rely on, not to mention the banks and the other businesses known for screwing their customers. Unit pricing sounds helpful, but they're just more weasel words from the telcos to hide the fact that their profits rely on keeping you in the dark.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
I like weasel words. Is it like shenanigans?
No.
No? I don't like weasel words.
Weasel words.
I think, yes. Now, one thing that does come to mind, though, even if it's not possible to get a true apples-to-apples comparison between plans, maybe I can get this and get us a little bit closer.
What about an iPhone-to-iPhone plan, then?
But what difference does that make? None at all. Moving along.
I've thrown him.
As long as if we get a little bit closer to that, one of the things is that 100 grams of cornflakes is 100 grams of cornflakes. It doesn't matter whether you buy it from company A, B, or C. Whereas 100 minutes of talk time on Telstra might be worth more than 100 minutes of talk time on Vodafone. Because
look, I agree
you get a
with
better
you,
service.
I agree with you, but so see, all the things that Adam was talking about, like flagfall,
he was
and
only
stuff.
Talking about price.
Yeah,
let's we talk can about buy talk phones time. On the phone network connections on the basis of things other than price. Sometimes the things that are worth more to us than our few dollars a month or whatever it is. You know, if it might be worth more to us to have a good, reliable service. Or to have a service that works where we happen to live, like someone was saying before, their Telstra service doesn't work. Maybe Optus does in that house, so maybe they'd be better going for Optus. But, you know, maybe there's things worth more than just purely price.
To see in the related news this last week, the ACMA has put all the telcos on notice and said, come on, shape up or we're going to regulate.
Yeah, but
and regulate we will.
I hope they do. Because I think that's what's going to take. They're all going to.
Isn't that their job already?
Well, no? It is. Yeah, they're hoping that you know the industry can regulate itself, but obviously it's not. It's quite
but
clearly.
Adam put it beautifully. It's like the ex coming back.
Please, yeah, that's
I'm
right.
Sorry,
pleading. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I promise
yeah.
I won't do it again.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a very good analogy. Yeah. Well done, Adam.
All right. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McCollum with Graham and Dr. Ron in this evening. The squeaky one has doing some manicuring on a Control-S finger, I think. So hopefully she'll join us again next week and we can find out what's going on in the computer games.
Andy B. in the chat room asks an interesting question. He says, what would people pay for an unlimited plan with a telco? If you had unlimited calls, SMSs, MMSs and unlimited data, what would you pay per month? For absolute unlimited everything.
Well, they've tried this in the United States, haven't they?
Would you pay $99 a month?
But this is where it's going to go, Dr. Ron.
this is where it will end up, because we're not going to be paying for the amount we consume. We'll be paying for the speed at which we consume.
Mm.
So if you're talking about an unlimited, absolutely all-you-can-eat thing at a really slow speed, well, fine, $40.
Yeah, you're just thinking about data, but
well, if everything goes down that way, because when you think about it, that's all a mobile phone call is data. It's digital.
Well, nah, we're not quite to that point yet.
The way the networks are designed...
Mobile phone networks are still designed around circuit switching.
Yeah.
Okay.
Circuit switch networks, packet switch networks, two different things.
Yeah. Anyway, well, my point is that...
I would think somewhere between 100 and 200 would be where that would be unlimited would be...
That's solar parity for a telco, is it, you reckon?
Well, that would be a defining number, wouldn't it, really? If someone like Telstra came out and said, for $129 a month, you can have unlimited everything, unlimited calls, texts, picture messages, data, and you will get the fastest data speed possible wherever you are, that would be a benchmark.
It would.
And then if Optus, for example, had a $99 plan, you'd say, well, a $99 plan's not really worth it because you only get, you know, this and this and this and this. Whereas for an extra $20, I can get unlimited or whatever. Yep.
But some people wouldn't ever, you know, some people want a $30 plan that only does have...
That's true.
A very limited amount.
Yep. We only make 10 phone calls a month, so...
You know, 120 or whatever you said, it would be too much for a lot of people.
You need a seniors plan. You know, the people that carry the phone for the safety reasons, you know, when they're going up to the street or, you know, those sort of low usage or inbound call usages only type sort of thing. There's a lot of people out there, and that's where the prepaids tend to seem to work quite well in that market.
Yeah, and you have to have a balance there. You have to have bring the cost of the unlimited plan down to the point where you get enough people on it that it averages out. Because if only the power users, only the people that really use extreme amounts of data and extreme numbers of phone calls are on the unlimited plan, they'll be uneconomical for the phone companies. What you've got to do is start getting, you know, average-ish users onto that plan so that it balances out.
Mm.
Because, sure, you'll have some people that'll use more than their share, but you've got to have enough there that use less than their share that it balances out.
It's like I think what Adam was saying last week, you know, that the telcos rely on people not using all of their data quota.
That's right,
as they go to business. You know, if they had for every 2 gigabytes data pack that they sold, people actually use 2 gigabytes. It just wouldn't be sustainable for them.
Straw poll, how much data have you used and how much month? How do you go close?
I checked it yesterday. I think I've got about 2 days to run and I'm about 25% into my data plan.
I'm at 31%. My quota ends on the 19th.
Which isn't far away, about a week away.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm about a gig. I'm halfway through and I've got a couple of days to go. So, yeah, you're right. I don't use it all.
But I've got that there as an emergency. I know that I've got that if I've got problems accessing it through my other one. I need it for work.
I've got an update here.
Oh, have you?
I've just opened my phone up and I've got an update here. It's from the person who said that, what was it? She wasn't in tonight because she couldn't save.
Yes.
The update is, I turn on the radio and I hear you on the way to get takeaway because I'm too busy to cook and I hear lies and slander about 16 tweets in the times you were talking to me. Lies. I was driving. I don't tweet and drive. I must have been using, what does it say? I must have been user error by Mr. Callaghan. There you go. Meanies in capital letters, exclamation mark.
Meanies.
Meanies.
Yes, I am a mean person. You're right, Lena.
I taunt you from afar.
It may have been my inexperience with the Twitter user interface.
Is that what it was?
Yes, yeah. I'm new to Twitter, as you know.
You are. Stick with that.
Yeah.
We'll buy it. Did you know Flash is soon to be available on a iGadget?
Speaking of lies and slander, I don't believe it for a minute. Explain yourself.
Seeing's believing, yes. And everyone's going to go, ha, ha, yeah, heard that all before. Anyway, Adobe have released Flash Media Server 4.5 and Adobe Flash Access 3 at IBC this week, which is the broadcasting convention. You know how I go to NAB in the United States on a semi-regular basis, where we get to play with and see and meet and
greet? You go to the National Australia Bank in the US?
That's the one. No? The National Association of Broadcasters, NAB.
Different NAB.
Yep, and that's where you go to see all the new toys when they come out, and cameras and edit suites and stuff like that. Well, there's the equivalent of that in Holland. It's not Holland, it's in Amsterdam.
Amsterdam's in Holland?
Yeah, it is, but Holland's actually not... I'll get shot down in this. Holland, it's actually the Netherlands, and Holland's just like a rurality area.
You're strictly correct, but we informally call the Netherlands.
Thank you.
Never mind. By the way, I apologise to the entire country of Norway who I offended earlier.
You have. There's a gone off in the chat.
Speaking of lies and slander, apparently they do have lots of...
especially the people themselves up invested there. In solar technology over there.
Yes.
You've upset them over there.
Yes, I'm expecting a Viking horde to appear at my place any minute now to sort me out.
It's a bit like Warcraft, really. Orcs versus humans. they sail in, don't they?
Now, are you suggesting that...
No, not at all.
No.
Not at all. Well, I was talking about Flash before. Two degrees of distraction on that one. Adobe has released Media Server 4.5. Now, what they're trying to do here is they're going to remove the smarts. You know how you had to download a Flash player and it's got the smarts to decode and display on your screen?
Yes.
Or the video that you would normally get. Well, what's happening now is that process is being taken into a server somewhere else. So someone else is looking after the crunch time.
Somewhere in the cloud.
In the cloud, out there, not on your iGadget or in your device, any device for that matter, if you load this up. And you'll be able to have video content, which traditionally required Flash, streamed to your device, which I think is quite cute.
And Apple are okay with this, are they?
Well, Apple always had a problem with having something in between I think it was their GUI and their kernel, the equivalent. You know, there was another layer that was being added, which they didn't like.
Yep.
Don't quote me on that, but there was an issue there that they didn't like having these other apps which put on their device, which took control of their device, and therefore they couldn't guarantee its performance. So it looks like Adobe are finally heeded to that, and they're actually building technology which does all what Flash does externally, so that you can then look at it on your iGadget. Now, when we see this, I don't know, but obviously people have to roll out Flash Media Server 4.5, so whether there be ISPs that'll do that, or video providers, which means...
I was going to say, how does your web browser know where the Flash 4.5 server is? Am I overthinking this, or...?
No, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that, but potentially what would happen is, as you request a file, whether your ISP has the ability to do that and load it up for you, or whether you have to have it hosted on a specific Flash server somewhere.
Or maybe it's embedded in the web page code for what server to use or something.
Don't know. Anyway, watch this space and we'll see what happens. But maybe we're getting to a day closer where we can watch things like iView on our iGadgets, because I do miss that. There is a workaround. There is a little app out there that does it, but it's not as good as the the RigiDig one.
iView's on the PC, the ABC... catch-up TV service, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you've got an application for iView on the iPad.
Yeah.
But you can't actually go to the iView website because it's got Flash in the website.
It does something. Probably not unlike with this, according to, all it's said to be good about it. Adobe has delivered Flash support to iOS devices is absolutely the right way forward. It has enabled the server to stream a version of Flash assets to an iPhone or an iPad. It never needs to run on a mobile device again.
Okay.
So that's potentially promising. Thanks, Adobe. Wait and see with that. In other news this week, Telstra rolls out IP version 6 for business and government. Now, we talked about this, I think, the other day, didn't we? We had international let's give it a go day for IPv6 and see if anything breaks, where a lot of companies decided to turn on the IPv6 protocol because we've run out of IPv4 numbers, you know, the old 203.123.456.789 protocol. It's done and dusted.
This is the address system that we use on the internet. So IP version 4, yep. Yeah, run out of numbers, just like we ran out of telephone numbers 10 years ago.
That's why we had to go to eight starting phone numbers starting with 8 in some areas.
No, we went to 10-digit phone numbers.
We did. We did that too. Didn't we move to 8 because we ran out of numbers starting with 9?
It depends on the area code you're listening to.
Is that what it was? Okay.
In Melbourne, we started using 8s, yeah, but in other areas... We started using other numbers.
Okay, well, there you go. So we went to 10-digit numbers.
10-digit numbers.
Which is the equivalent of IPv6, I guess.
Yeah, but that's not important right now. That's phone numbers, yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking about
it's the same
numbers.
Thing.
It is.
It's the same thing. It's like if I want to ring you, I type in an 8-digit number into my phone.
Instead of a 7-digit number, yeah.
Yeah, and it connects to you.
Now, IP version 6 will work alongside IP version 4 on the same network. So they could actually enable the IP version 6 interfaces and test them without any service disruption.
Yes.
To normal traffic?
Yes.
Well, Telstra has begun to give it a go to government and wholesale customers, but Big Pond retail customers won't be given such a trial just at this point in time. So, yes, I think it'd be good. Start seeing our big telcos roll out IPv6.
Are you doing anything, Graham, with IP version 6 in your professional capacity?
Ooh, not a great deal. Yeah, I've got it enabled in a few places. Some Windows servers use it internally, like within the server, But no, most things are still running IPv4. But yes, it's certainly something that's I'm aware I should be ramping up my skills about. I'm embarrassed to admit that I haven't done a lot with it.
My understanding of it is that if IP version 6 is enabled, then a computer, for example, might request an IP version 6 address, and if that's available, it'll get one. But if the IP version 6 service isn't there, it'll just go back to IP version 4. Is that sort of how it works?
Like a fallback system.
You can certainly run them side by side, as you say. So there's no direct connection. You know, with if it fails to get an IPv6 address, it can get a, it gets a. They're separate protocols.
Yeah. Yep.
So both IPv6 and IPv4 might start up and look for an address, or try and use an address,
well,
or try and
both.
Find a network. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. But there's no, you know, there's no not necessarily a connection one to the other.
Yep. Yep.
IPv4 addresses are a subset of IPv6 addresses anyway.
Okay.
So if you're on an IPv6 network and you want to talk to somebody on an IPv4 network, you just put the right, you know, the right prefix on it, and the last few bytes are the old IPv4 address.
So it's 10-digit type sort of thing, is it? Like the old phone is, just to go back to Dr. Ron's
in
analogy.
A way, you seem to be obsessed with telephones here, Andrew.
I'm sorry.
there's a few concepts that we've got that we've learned to accept with IPv4, which were sort of originally were workarounds for the lack of IPv4 addresses. These are things like the private non-routable addresses, like the 192.168 addresses and the 10. addresses. That we use in our private networks, and we all use them at home, you know, in the studio here, in our businesses, we all run these private networks.
So you could have 100 computers at home or at work, and they're all represented as one IP address on the internet.
And then you do what's called network address translation onto the internet. And people are using that as a sort of a pseudo firewall situation. Whereas with IPv6, there's enough addresses that every device on your internal network can also have a real world external address. So you don't have to do this network address translation nonsense anymore. So although you still could, but yeah, you can design the network in a completely different way.
And the wonderful thing is, if you're sitting at home and all you do is send and receive a few emails a day and check your stocks on the World Wide Web and you know nothing about any of this, it'll all just happen for you.
Yes.
You hope.
Maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Fingers crossed. That's why they did the test day.
It is. It is.
Just, they wanted to see if it'd break it before it was too far down the track.
But the thing is that the new operating systems like Windows 7 and Windows 8 coming up,
all
and Server 2008, yeah, they're all built to support IPv6 natively. So, yes, when they encounter, if you haven't changed any of the default settings and they encounter a router that's capable of doing IPv6, it should, in theory, just work, as you say.
Did you know that with Windows 8 ships IE10?
That doesn't surprise me.
See, IE9 only came out about a year ago, didn't it? Remember all the shenanigans and song and dance about that? We went to breakfast.
But that's normal because the very tight integration that Microsoft have in between the web browser and the operating system.
Mm.
So when they bring out a new operating system, it's not unusual for them to match that with a new Internet Explorer version.
They've got to really kill off the old IE6, don't they? It's still out there giving them more grief. Anyway, Tech Talk Radio, if you need to go, now's the time to go, and we'll be back with more after this.
You're listening.
Google has opted out of Germany now.
But that's not the whole problem.
Lino, help us. You need to come back. All is forgiven.
Yeah, what do you want? I can't deal with this now.
Absolutely.
That's very wrong.
It was very rude.
And obviously pretty good on the batteries too.
Not happy, Jan.
Oh, well. You have nothing here which does not have an Apple on it.
That's the way I like it.
Couldn't even tell whether you were male or female.
No. Frankly, no.
Have you worked out the five-finger fondle yet?
I hate toolbars on browsers.
Yes.
That really drives me insane.
Yes.
that lacks couth as well.
That lacks complete couth.
Graham took umbrage during the week with a ranking system that I developed on the forum.
Should have known that was coming.
A good cabler is worth their weight in gold.
Absolutely.
Mm. Let's talk about Apple, shall we?
Yay.
Oh, Apple scandal.
Yeah. That's when I thought I got out. They pull me back in.
Entertaining.
They post some lolcats.
No, they haven't posted any lolcats yet that I've seen.
Informative.
At some point, litigation must come to an end.
Exactly.
Independent.
I'm not queuing.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio, it's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just during the break, I was reading an article there. Mr. Quigley, who's the boss of the NBN rollout here in Australia, Mike Quigley, said there's a lot of undue pressure being applied to NBN Co. about getting connected in some councils. So the councils are giving him heaps. Lobbying NBN Co. to say, connect us.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's good.
You reckon?
Yeah, I think it's good that councils are keen to get themselves hooked up. I think that's appropriate.
Well,
lobbying on behalf of the ratepayers?
I think it's probably a good thing.
Something on behalf of the ratepayers?
Well, would you rather that or an electoral process? Graeme, you're very cynical tonight.
Sorry, an electoral process?
Yeah. Because hasn't the NBN Co., if you have a good look at where it's been rolled out in certain politically challenged environments?
Has it? That's a scurrilous accusation.
It is. Very scurrilous. Yes. But have a look. Draw your own conclusions. I'm just putting it out there for everyone to have a bit of a look-see.
I'd like to see a rollout where there's more than 50% take-up.
Well,
that was disappointing, Brunswick.
Are you talking about Brunswick?
Yeah, come on, Brunswick. Lift. You know,
that they don't use NBN, they use mobile phones. They've got too much coffee to be drunk at corner coffee shops. Why do you need the NBN when you're connected via a wireless network over a mobile phone arrangement?
You still need an NBN.
I agree. They could have done it over here, where we are.
Yeah,
over
this side of town.
Georgia, I think. Didn't Georgia up north have relatives who were connected to the NBN?
Yes.
Was she not going to get back to us about some experiences about being connected to the NBN?
She will.
Just watching the chat now.
She wants you to get your happy pants on, Graeme.
Oh.
I'm not sure what that means.
Were you grumpy or something, were you?
Perhaps I was. Am I grumpy?
Please explain, Georgia. Come and join us in the chat room if you're listening live. chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where we all are.
If you're not listening to us live, come and join us on a Monday night at 8 p.m. in the chat room when we are live. It's fun.
8 p.m. Eastern Australian time.
That's good. I should put a traffic alert out too, something we wouldn't normally do. There's been a bingle up on the, assuming it's the Pacific Highway. Not Pacific Highway. What's the road that goes around Australia? Dandenong Road.
The Princess Highway.
Yeah, just near Port Hedland. One of our listeners is just up there. He's in his truck waiting for a traffic accident to clear up there somewhere. So he's listening to us all the way up there in...
That's two
north,
crows.
North Two crows, yes. Yeah. In northwest Western Australia.
He drives big trucks.
Yeah, so if you're up that way, watch out. There's a bit of a bingle ahead.
Oh.
It's a long way from where we are, that's for sure. Let's talk a bit about Android, shall we?
Okay.
This is the operating system which resides on...
smartphones that aren't iPhones.
Yeah, pretty much everything else that isn't an iPhone. We've got new versions coming out. Do you know what they're called? I thought these were quite cute.
What are we up to? Ice cream or something coming up?
What are we up to first at the moment?
We had Froyo. That was ages back. That's what we're stuck with on Froyo. Our devices.
Yep. So G.
Yeah.
What was G?
Oh, no idea.
H was Honeycomb, wasn't it? Or something?
I think something like that, yeah. So anyway, the new versions, Graeme is right. The new version or the next version is known as Ice Cream Sandwich.
Ice Cream Sandwich?
I don't want to see that one out the front of Google in Mountain View. That'll be fun. See if it melts.
Because they put little statues of all these things out
they
the front
do.
Of their
they're
headquarters,
not,
don't
they're
they?
They're not little. They're quite considerably sizable, and it looks like a bit of a takeaway food outlet now, if you've driven down that part of the world in recent times. There's just, you know, cupcakes and all sorts of things there. G'day, Andy, if you're listening.
G was gingerbread, that's right.
That's right, the next one after Ice Cream Sandwich will be known as, I'd do a drum roll if I had one, Jelly Bean.
Are you for real?
No. Oh, yes. I am for real.
No, yes. Maybe. I leapt to Noah of all things Wikipedia, and that future releases are currently only has up to I for ice cream sandwich.
So yeah, the one after that's going to be Jelly Bean.
Okay, I'll have to take your word for it.
They should call them Jelly Babies.
Where did you see that?
Oh, on the Android blog.
On the Android blog? That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay. I think the first one that had a food name was called Cupcake.
That's right.
Yeah.
Cupcake was the first one I had, I think, on my very, very first Android phone.
Oh, we like version 1.5. That's a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
Have you, I wonder if your device is still working with version 1.5.
It probably is if I charged it up. Sitting in a shoebox at home on a shelf, I think.
Anyone know what came next after Cupcake?
Without looking, D.
There's a eclair thing.
What was D?
Eclair was version 2.
Yeah.
You're right. Eclair there was one in between.
Because I stood on the Eclair and I had my photo taken on it at Google and I was there. Because that's how I knew that one was there.
Eclair was version 2, yeah. So what was in between Cupcake and
something
Eclair?
Starting with D. Something
Dapper
starting
Drake.
No,
the operating system's mixed up.
You're completely in the wrong...
George is right. They should call it Bagel. Oh, my battery's died. Come back, phone. There we go.
Bagel would have been a long time ago.
Yeah, it would have been. That would have been the B version.
Let's not get back onto the bagels.
All right.
Donut it was the D.
Donut, that's right.
Yep. And then we had
Homer Simpson's favourite food.
E for eclair. Oh. And then F for froyo, for frozen yogurt, gingerbread, and
honeycomb. And now Andrew reliably informs us. What was
Ice cream sandwich.
No.
Oh, ice cream sandwich and then jelly bean.
There are people with blogs that speculate about, like, they've mapped out the whole alphabet.
Windows have worked it out. They've gone back to numbers. Windows 7, Windows 8.
Yeah.
Next one will probably be Windows 9. No surprises there.
Probably a sensible approach, really.
Yeah. They've managed to stay with numbers all the way through their Internet Explorer range of browsers. So they confused issues a bit with the Office range, didn't they? Didn't they go numbers incrementally, then they changed
and then to years?
Years. Yeah. Everyone goes, what's the current version? Oh, it's Windows 10, which is Windows 12, isn't it, Graham? Says he looking. Help about on a Windows document file will probably tell us.
You mean a Word document file?
Yes, a Word document, sorry.
Yes, Office still has a version number underneath. Yes, I can't remember exactly, to be honest.
Yeah,
I think
it's 12.
What version have I got installed here?
Whilst you're working on that, we're talking about Google. They've bought this restaurant review site in the United States called Zagat, or Zagat, however you would like to pronounce it with your American accent.
How do you spell that?
Z-A-G-A-T.
Zagat. I don't know how you pronounce it.
Now, Zagat is the guide that rates restaurants according to real diners' experiences. A bit like the Good Food Guide here. Although, no, that's not really the case. That's what people go around, those chefy things go around and do. But anyway, but you've got to ask why Google has invested in a service like this. Are they starting to try and get back into more, user-friendly environments or user-friendly apps or stuff like that? But the sale of the guide has taken a bit of time, apparently, and Zagat was put up for sale back in 2008 when a couple who founded the business appointed Goldman Sachs to find a buyer. So they wanted to sell it. But since then, in the last 3 years, Google's finally come around and said, oh, yeah, we'll have it type sort of thing. So they got nearly 350,000 contributors. I guess it's a good advertising portal, and especially if people are using it.
Google developers have to eat.
They do. They do. They've got a lovely calf there. Very nice.
They know they have Google-sanctioned eating places, then that's good. They'll go and eat.
Well, maybe that's what it's all about.
Get sustenance so they can code stuff.
Hmm. In a survey.
They wouldn't want to accidentally go to a Yahoo-flavoured restaurant or a
Now I know why Microsoft, you did what you did there, Graham.
Microsoft-sponsored
Andrew,
diner, would they?
Andrew, there was a survey.
Yeah, Graham, there was a survey during the course of the week. Apple's, there's an organisation called JD Power Customer Survey, which did a survey recently regarding customer satisfaction of mobile phones and brands. This is in the United States. No points for guessing who came out on top, but suffice to say that it's who we expected it to be, and that is Apple. And if I can read the very...
Did I hear a news article, just to digress a tiny bit, that Apple's turnover now, or Apple's budget is now larger than the United States of America budget, is it?
I don't know whether that was it or not, but I know that Apple could fix the American debt, I reckon, fairly easily.
Hmm.
So, but anyway Apple came out on top of this survey with a value of 838, which is the, happy camper type sort of thing out of, I think, 1,000 in the survey, followed by HTC, which was at 801. Now, if you scroll all the way down to the bottom, guess who's on the bottom?
Pass.
Oh, come on. Dr. Ron.
Microsoft.
No, think of a mobile phone manufacturer that's not too flash at the moment.
Oh, the one that might be Finnish.
That's the
apostrophe
one.
D.
Yeah.
Nokia?
That's the one. So you got there eventually. Nokia way down the bottom there with Palm, LG and RIM sitting down at the bottom of the customer satisfaction survey.
RIM being the maker of the BlackBerry. Yeah,
BlackBerry's on the way out at the moment. So it'd be interesting to see what happens in their plan, their future plan, their five-year plan. Do you reckon they got one?
BlackBerry is very popular among UK rioters, apparently.
It's also very popular in the United States. A lot of people in the US have BlackBerries.
That's true, yes.
When I was there, there's plenty of them. Everyone had one. They were a bit like iPhones here. But over there, they were BlackBerries. They might have changed. I don't think iPhones work too flash on the American networks, but the BlackBerries had half a chance or something. So, anyway, in other news this week, a Melbourne company got sprung for using naughty copies of Adobe's stuff, Microsoft stuff, and Autodesk, which is like 3D Max type.
Yeah, they were
stuff.
Using software without having the appropriate licenses.
That's correct. The Business Software Alliance, otherwise known as the BSA, it's a rather unfortunate acronym really, has settled a record Australian software piracy case with a Melbourne company for around $150,000. They must have had a lot of software that they were using without the appropriate registration and receipts for, I guess. So it's good to see that the BSA are actually out there policing this. And this was a direct result of the big tip-off that the BSA had, dobbing a pirate, dobbing someone who's using...
Yeah, apparently a former employee.
Oh, really? Bitter and Twisted?
Yeah, reported them for, not having the appropriate licenses for the software they were using. Now, of course, it's from a business management point of view, it's doubly stupid to go down that track, because not only do you not have a license and you're subject to this sort of action, but you're not getting your updates, you're not using the current versions.
You're
not able to get any support. That's true. So it's running big risks on a number of fronts to run your business that way.
Absolutely.
And, If nothing goes wrong and you're extremely lucky, then it might be good for the bottom line, but it's running a huge risk.
Mm. Yes, and a lot of companies, software providers, should I say, do offer trials for considerable periods of time, including Microsoft. Those guys, you can run certain apps like Visio for 90 days or server applications for, I think, 180 days, I think. Is that right, Graham?
Depends on the application, Sometimes 60 days, sometimes 30 days, sometimes longer,
So you can certainly get a good run at these sort of things and evaluate them in a working environment before you actually have to buy your licenses. But at the end of the day...
And in general, you really have to work... I mean, if Microsoft find that you haven't got enough CALs or whatever, usually their first response is going to be, well, okay, they'll have a look and see if it's a genuine mistake and give you the opportunity to buy the CALs and get up to date.
They usually give you the benefit of the doubt, won't they?
CAL is a client access license, and you need those so that, let's say, for example, you're running server and you've got five people who can log in, and you've got a few more employees, you have to buy those seats. So, again, that's what a CAL is, a client access license.
And sometimes...
a pack of five, don't you?
Depends on how you buy them, yeah.
Yeah.
Your retail ones, that can generally come in fives, or you can buy them through the volume license agreement. There's a number of ways to do these things.
Yep.
But
pack of five will be tons, I reckon, for your average small business.
Well, it depends how many
Unless
users
you're doing
you've
a really,
got.
Really good trade.
Yeah. But, you know, they usually come along and help you to become compliant rather than prosecute. So I presume you have to be really belligerent and to have really gone out of your way to do the wrong thing to get into this predicament.
Yeah. And a lot of software these days, obviously we're not talking about the three that were mentioned in this news item, but a lot of software these days is traditionally small guys trying to make a crust, and it pays to support these guys. You know, that's what they do for a living.
Mm.
You know, whether you're using, you know, great FTP clients or something that's shareware that you end up using a lot, I must admit I've got that attitude at work. Whereas if I evaluate it and it's working for me and it's doing a great job, then you buy the goddamn stuff. You know, it's not
certainly for those sorts of
them, give them a few bucks.
It's there's the big mainstream products that you use all the time, and then there's all these little add-ons. Like sometimes you need, you don't need WinZip these days for everything because you've got a zip client built into Windows now.
Mm.
But if you're doing advanced things with zipping and unzipping files, you might go and buy a third-party zip application, and it's only going to cost, $29 or whatever it might happen to be. it's really worth paying that, because if you're at the point where you need something specialized to do that job, if something goes wrong, you also need someone to go to say, hey, this isn't working, fix it for me, or help me solve the problem. And if you've registered and paid the money, A, you're going to keep the project going so that it's going to be there in the future when you need it.
Yeah.
And B, you're going to be able to have a better path to getting help if you need it. But even with Microsoft, that's the same thing. If you've paid your Microsoft licenses, and particularly if you've bought software assurance as well, you can run whichever version of the software you like within the current sort of usable versions, and you get support. If you ring them up and you can get help, or your IT support people can ring them up and get you help.
Yeah, it's worth it. And like with the stuff we use, we use Avid as a provider of hardware and software, and we have assurance on those things, which basically means that if it goes broke...
Have you had occasion to ring them for support for various problems? No,
but the stuff just works these days. But then again, they do supply a proper turnkey system.
But if it did stop working, your business would be in a bit of a pickle, because that's your bread and butter, is doing that work.
Correct.
So you need that assurance of having somebody to ring if something does go wrong.
Yep, they'll bring over a new box straight up, plug it in, turn it on, away we go.
Yeah.
If that's what happens. So, and of course, you pay for that, and it's well worth it in those sort of business things. The other thing too, I bought a great little app the other day to do offsite backups for me,
which
I could structure and time and do my own thing, because Windows didn't do it by default. I just wanted to start moving stuff off-site, and it was probably about the best $50 I think I've ever spent.
Yeah, yeah.
Two bright stars or something like that it was. But yeah, they were really good. Really good little application.
Yeah, those sorts of things can really be worth their weight.
So pay for it, guys. It's all good.
Mm.
The Australian reported during the course of the week that Optus, our number two telco, has signed up to the National Broadband Network gag order. Now, I wasn't familiar with this, but apparently Optus...
That's probably because there's a gag order.
Well, yeah, apparently Optus has promised not to criticise the National Broadband Network in key regions for 15 years under a deal that raises new warnings over the $36 billion project, saying that's going to stifle competition and all that sort of stuff. Is this... I didn't know that they had,
where was this reported, Andrew?
This was in The Australian. That's why I said
this at the
beginning.
Okay, just to clarify, yep, yeah. So...
Now, I didn't know that they had guns for hire for the NBN. If you sign up, you can't talk about it. Did you know anything about this? Or maybe they're talking about they can't have a go at the competition.
No, look, I honestly don't know about this, whether it's something I've read about and not taken in. I'm a bit baffled by this. And I'd like to read the background on it before we made a big thing about it.
All right. This is just a week after the competition regulator warned that parts of the $11 billion deal with Telstra could prove detrimental to competition and consumers. Official documents revealed that an $800 million deal with Optus includes an anti-disparagement provision, which means keep your mouth shut. So they're obviously trying to, for whatever reason, keep everyone on side so that no one can deposition any other carrier to get an unfair advantage, I'm guessing.
I don't know. I'd like to, this story smacks to me of something that's got something deeper underneath it that we need to know about.
Okay. The ban would apply in the areas where the number two telco has agreed to shut down its cable network, which presently passes 2.4 million premises and is so also likely to affect 504,000 Optus customers who would therefore be migrated across to the NBN. So, yeah, well, dig deeper on that one.
Yeah, that's one we're going to follow up, I think.
Microsoft had a bit of an outage during the course of the week.
Uh-oh.
It's not what everyone said. They said, damn you, Microsoft. It affected a lot of people.
What happened?
Some 364 million people it could have affected. Their Microsoft Office 365, which is their cloud-based docs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And Hotmail, which was their email client.
Yeah.
I didn't think they had Hotmail still, but obviously they do.
They do, yeah.
It took a bit of a dive. And
heavily tied into their Windows Live little circle of little world, yeah.
Anyway, it went down for a bit and it was out for a couple of hours and slowly came back up, which is probably no consolation to people that had stored stuff on the cloud and go, oh, where's my hard work gone type stuff.
This is the danger of doing that, of course.
What areas were affected, Andrew? Is it saying what countries or?
Globally.
Okay.
So anyone
Hotmail is everywhere. It's been around for so long and so many people use it. It's probably got millions of customers.
So the outage affected the Microsoft Live customers and cloud services and, took around about 4 hours and they sort of started getting up. You know, the SkyDrive things and all that they're giving away? They what they rebranded
for online storage.
6 months, yeah, yep. All that sort of stuff. So their cloud-based system took
Google,
a bit of a...
Google had a similar problem a few months ago where it took the Google apps and some Gmail users offline for a little while.
Yep, Microsoft aren't on their Pat Malone there.
No. But it would be very disturbing if you were a business who had, or you know, or even an individual who had all your vital documents there and you couldn't get to them.
Do you use much in the cloud that you don't back up locally? Everything I have...
Lots and lots.
Really?
Absolutely.
I have everything pretty much backed up locally. I use the cloud as a backup in a lot of respects. I'm not that trusting yet. You obviously are, Dr. Ron.
Yeah, all my email's in the cloud and I use a third-party provider for backups. For doing backup, a little backup client that runs on each of my computers at home.
You're happy,
and just trickles upstream continuously, just sends everything up.
So you're happy putting everything you own in the cloud?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, why not?
Oh, absolutely.
But you were saying you use it for backup, so you for your email.
Yep.
is probably the primary sort of primary version is in the cloud.
That's right. Yep.
But your documents and files and documents and photos and all that, you've got local copies, but you back them up.
That's correct. So you use it locally.
You're only using the cloud as a backup.
That's true. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Whereas some people use things like Google Apps or Microsoft. What's it called? Microsoft 360, whatever it is.
Office 360, the cloud-based office thing.
Primary documents are in the cloud.
Yeah.
Yes. Gmail is a classic example of a cloud-based email system.
That's probably the one that most people have used.
Yeah. Now,
and Hotmail is the same.
Oh, yes, of course. I have a Gmail account, but I use it to back up my... Like, everything that gets sent to my work and private emails, I bounce up into Gmail, so it's like a archive as opposed to...
So you don't use the Gmail as the primary interface to access it.
Correct.
Yes, whereas I do for my mail. I have a Google Apps account for my business, and I have my domain name connected to that. So, yeah, my email primarily goes to the Google Apps, the Gmail within Google Apps.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I use as the primary source. But at home, I do have the connector plugged into Outlook,
mm-hmm.
So that... on a semi-regular basis, I just launch Outlook and it synchronizes with Google Apps, so I have an offline copy.
So your apps is primary and your local Google...
Well, local is a backup if it all goes. Yeah.
Yeah, see, on the other way around, I use my email to me, or should I say my POP accounts, which is where all my mailboxes are all stored on a server somewhere, and when mail hits that, it automatically forwards it to my Gmail account and then waits for me to pop in and pick it up and pull it down. So.
But then you probably, your primary work is sitting at a particular desk.
To a degree and out and about, but everything goes to everything these days, doesn't it?
Whereas my primary work is at various customer sites all scattered around the state. So yeah. It's important that the Gmail, the cloud one, be my primary one because I want, whether I access it from my phone, from my laptop, from my computer at home, from, say, a computer at a customer site, I'm seeing exactly the same data.
Yeah. We use a lot of large files, as you can imagine, in our gig with, the big graphic files and movie files and things like that. And they're all good and fine, but we use you send it. To send those large files around, because you can send up to 100 meg free.
That's a file transfer service.
Yeah, yes. And they're pretty good, but they're all... But once again, like the cloud, it disappears after a while, but...
But like what Graeme's saying, predominantly your business model is that you access everything from the one office, if not from the one computer all the time. So you're always in one geographical location when you're working on your data.
Traditionally, we are, because we've got big data requirements.
Yep, whereas Graeme's business is all over the place because of the nature of the work he does.
Yep, and I need to be sure that the data I'm seeing on my phone and on my laptop is the primary data.
Well, it's an interface to the same data, to the actual data.
Now, I haven't been quite so trusting with my actual documents, my Word documents and my spreadsheets and all those sorts of things. I do use some of those in my Google Apps account and saved in Google Apps. The ones that I really need to be portable. But normally what I have is I have them saved on my laptop, I have them saved on my desktop at home, and I have a synchronization for the business documents.
Uh-huh.
They're synchronized between the two using one of those document sync services.
Yeah, so using it as a backup to a degree.
So,
and any business could do that.
They back up each other, and they're both primary in effect.
Oh,
so
cool.
Neither of them is superseded by the other.
So if you have a hard drive crash at home or at the office...
I've got them all on my laptop and vice versa. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, which is a good way of having multiple copies.
Yeah.
Off-site backups, always a great investment.
Yeah, and I think that same synchronization service can save them in the cloud as well.
And the step before that, the Control-S key is also pretty good.
Lena, just check your text message.
I haven't heard one for at least 5 minutes.
All right.
So, all right. Now, Internode.
Internode, yes.
We spoke last week. Simon Hackett had a bit of a shake-up.
Yes.
He's become the CTO now, the Chief Technical Officer.
Which, from what I hear, is a job he was effectively doing anyway.
He's a techo.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard him interviewed on a number of channels across recent times, and yes, he certainly knows his stuff. But Internode would probably be the number three ISP in Australia, would
They're it not? Certainly one of the biggest ISPs behind sort of the real, you know, powerhouses like Telstra and Optus.
Yeah, well, iiNet's number two. Now, that was an amalgamation, or over the course of time, they've consumed things like Netspace and the Aussie
Mail. Yeah.
And they sort of tend to grow by buying out their competitors, not unlike some other large American companies that we all know of too. Once they become threats, you just buy them. Isn't that how Wilkinson Sword came to be? Anyway, that's another story, which is not relevant for this radio show. So, anyway, Simon Hackett is now becoming the Chief Technical Officer of Internode. They're South Australian-based too, if I recall too. So, that's just a follow-up from last week. And I guess, also, Dr. Ryan, you mentioned in the course of the news this week, cybercrime.
Yeah, I did.
Now, this was a bit of an interesting statistic. It's costing $109 billion, according to Norton Cybercrime Report. Now, is that just in Australia or is that a global...
No, the $109 billion figure is... Oh, I don't know what that is. Look, globally...
I'd say that'd be globally. That's
no, globally it's $388 billion US. There are a lot of numbers floating around and people getting them confused. I think there was another news service that quoted that number as the cost to Australians, but no, that's not quite right. You can actually read the study online. If you go to Symantec.com, and I'll pop the link in the show notes again, you'll be able to read it for yourself. What I said in the news was that the cybercrime is now costing Australians in excess of $4.5 billion annually. And that figure's derived from the actual $1.8 billion, which has been lost from online fraud and identity theft, and an estimated $2.8 billion in lost productivity and associated costs with that theft and that those deceptions. So 20,000 people were surveyed in a number of countries, including just over 800 people in Australia.
800. Is that a good enough cross-section, do you think? 800, that's not many when you think about a percentage of population. Is that a fair enough slice of the pie?
I think it probably is, and they've probably extrapolated it with the numbers from the other countries as well to get a pretty good indication.
So I'm a bit cynical with a lot of these companies that release these reports, like
absolutely.
An
You've
antivirus
got to look at the
company
yes.
and an anti... they're only selling up their wares. They're using scaremongering and scare tactics to get people to buy. These guys are pretty good. I should get their software for my computer.
Yeah, absolutely. In their defense, Norton Symantec contracted an independent market research company to do to create the report.
Ah, yes, but the press release is their spin.
The press release is Norton's spin, that's right. Yep. So you have to look at it with a grain of salt, but interesting figures nonetheless.
So where do you think cybercrime's going to go? Are people becoming a little bit more switched on? I guess in some countries, we're all used to the... because we don't talk about it this much these days. That's why I'm sort of mentioning it now. But like, if you've looked in your junk email box of recent times, how many things do you get from the Commonwealth Bank, the ANZ Bank, MasterCard, PayPal? We've changed it. Are people now, do you think, really aware of those type of click here to log in to change your stuff or the worst thing you could possibly do?
I think people are becoming more educated. And on the other side of the coin... this type of fraudulent and illegal activity is increasing. Which one is starting to outpace the other? I don't know. I suspect because of the sheer volume of the crime, unfortunately, we're going to see a rise in the cost before... It's going to get worse before it gets better, put it that way.
Speaking of other forms of crime, which I guess this is could be a spin-off, have you been into your local supermarket of recent days and paid your bill with your credit card?
Yes, I have.
Have you noticed the fact that you don't have to sign your card or pin it or doing any of that for certain values of transactions?
Yeah, I think it's under about $30 if you just buy something quickly and you use your chip and pin or your, the chip on your credit card. And if it's under a certain value, it doesn't even ask you for a pin. It just says that's fine.
Yeah, exactly. I used a chipless card the other day in my favourite supermarket.
It's a magnetic stripe. Old technology, Andrew.
Yeah, yep. And I was not required to pin it or sign it in any way, shape or form. And that bothered me to a degree because I thought, well, what's to stop?
Why should it bother you? It's not you that's taking the risk. It's the vendor that's taking the risk.
So long as it's the vendor taking the risk and not me.
Absolutely. Don't let it bother you.
Okay, I won't. Now that you've told me that, Graham. Because I thought, how hard is that? If someone decides that they're going to, you know, take opportunity, handbag snatches or something like that, they grab two
credit
cards.
All you've got to do is report your credit card stolen. Your bank will say that these transactions were not legitimate and it's the vendor that's taking the risk.
Really?
The vendor meaning the supermarket, yeah.
So how do they go with those, what do you call the wave ones? Like you go to
the pay wave. Well, it's the
pay wave. Is it the same thing, is it?
It's a similar risk.
So the vendor's taking the risk to speed you up, getting you through the checkout.
Of course, yes.
Why would
they
do that?
Because it's worth that. Because it's not worth them spending time collecting the pin or checking, or in particular checking signatures. Checking signatures is a pain in the neck for values that small.
That's right.
It's better for them to get the sale, get you out the door, and for the small number that get challenged later on, that's not a problem to them.
In terms of their workflow, the 5 seconds or 10 seconds it takes for you to punch in a pin. Or for them to check a signature.
In particular, to check a signature.
In particular. It's going to cost them more to do that than it is just to pay any transaction which is disputed.
Yep.
So from a workflow point of view and a productivity point of view.
This is not a new thing. It's just becoming more widespread.
Mm. But if you go into that yellow factory, that yellow place where you get Blu-rays and things like that, they've got a $100 limit on their PayWave thingy-me-bob.
Well, hang on. That's not by vendor. The PayWave limit of $99 for one of the cards and $100 for the other, it's $1 different value, but I can't remember which is which for between Visa and MasterCard.
Really?
one of them's $99, one of them's $100. But it doesn't matter. That limit is part of the PayWave system.
Okay. So who takes that risk? Is that a PayWave organisation or someone that comes between the retailer and the consumer?
Yeah, I think the financial institution takes part of that risk, as they always do. But, with the not collecting the PIN for the non-PayWave transactions, for just normal credit card transactions, that risk is to a large degree to the vendor. But, of course, the financial institutions are always taking a risk with lost cards and things like
Absolutely.
That. Absolutely. So, between the two of them, they take up most of that risk. You'll find that in the agreement with your bank, if you do the right thing, if you don't tell anybody else your PIN and you do take reasonable precautions, and you still have your card stolen or misused, that there's a limit as to how much you pay for fraudulent transactions anyway.
Mm. So, you still have to take an interest in your credit card statement and you have to be aware of what's going
absolutely.
On. But if you identify a suspect transaction, you say, hang on a minute, I don't think I did actually buy something like that on eBay, or I don't think I did spend $75 at Safeway on that day. You just report it to your financial institution. The financial institution will go to the vendor and say, show us the proof of purchase for this. Show us the signature or the PIN number.
Yeah.
We didn't get one. Fine. So it's the vendor's loss then. It's their liability.
I'm feeling better now. Mm. So what happens at Macca's? Because they do that.
Macca's is exactly the same. $35 same. Limit. Yep.
So $35 worth of cheeseburgers and that's it. And you're done. So as long as someone doesn't nick your card.
If you're a thief and you've stolen a credit card and you're using credit cards fraudulently, you'd use it up to $35
but
or something.
As I say, this is not a new thing. It's just becoming more widespread. I mean,
is this a global trend or is this just here in Australia?
I'm not sure. I'd be pretty sure it's a global trend.
I'm sure it's global. Yep.
But I remember quite some years ago, you paying for parking using the parking pay stations where you put in the thing and you put in your credit card afterwards.
That's a crime. Don't park in Melbourne. Take a taxi.
Sometimes you need to, and sometimes it's even worth it if you can charge your customers enough to cover it.
Sydney's just as bad. Sydney's not as bad.
But the machines that can accept, you see one person go there and they spend 10 minutes trying to feed in a $5 note, whereas if they just put their Visa card in, it would not require their PIN, it will just read the Visa card. The parking company takes the risk for the few dollars of parking. It might be $30 or $40 worth of parking.
You know what irks me about those parking guys? It's the fact that you put your thingy-me-bob in and they come back and they say, okay, you've been here for 3 hours, that's $66.
Yeah.
And you put your card in and then they come back, we've added 2% for a fee on top of it. Oh, that just really irks me.
Oh, credit card surcharges.
The handling fee, that extra 2% or 10% if you put your Amex in there or something like that.
It's all tax deductible.
But still, it annoys me. Anyway, I've entered. Hotspot Gadget website of the week. And you've got a doozy for us this week. Carefully scripted.
It's been carefully handcrafted. And yes, yeah. I'll be reading word for word.
Coming up after the, yes. I hope you're listening, Brian. Hi, Tanya.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
You've got to remember that compression is not your friend.
Is it for credit cards only, or is it FBOS as well?
Steve Wozniak, there was.
The traitor. I'm down to four cables again, not 14,000.
Go away.
Click here to upgrade.
If you put your entire life online, you get what you deserve in some ways.
Optus have said sorry, and so say all of us. Fantastic.
This
all right.
This is why we can't have nice things.
This is why you can't have nice things.
Entertaining, informative, independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my own.
Good to have you back, Dr. Ron.
Thank you. This is exciting. Yeah. Brock, via the Tech Talk Radio feedback form, has this week's gadget suggestion. The MCTVIA, M-C-T-I-V-I-A, by Inspire Technology, is a wireless media streamer. The MCTVIA claims to be the first device that can show all content from your Mac, as well as Windows computer, on your TV wirelessly. The device allows you to stream up to 8 computers to your TV. It allows you to control your computer situated in another room and stream the video right to the television.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, great for catch-up TV and websites like Unblock Us, which we've played with in the past. Works on PCs, Macs, iOS, Android and BlackBerry.
So it's got everything covered.
It does. The RRP are available from the big black and yellow electronics type shops for around about $299 Australian.
So you'll pick it up for about $199 on eBay and some of the other shop bots. Go and do a shop bot.
That's it. Have a shop around. For more details, go to mctivia.com.au.
Can I just add one more thing to that?
Please do.
I've been playing with Boxy during the course of the week. Boxy has a really good thing where you can browse stuff on your iPad and watch it on your iPad, and then you can actually hit send to telly, and it just comes up on the telly.
That's pretty cool.
Which is really quite nice.
Interesting that in the news, Harvey Norman have received criticism for selling this MCTVIA box because it allows people to use VPNs to bypass Australian copyright laws.
And the problem with that is?
The problem is that it's bypassing local laws and local content.
Mm.
So that's why they've been bagged in the press.
Oh, really? They got bagged for it?
Yeah, Harvey Norman have been criticised for it. Yeah.
Who buy? By those people, Free TV Australia and all those sort of people.
Yet again, talking about credible sources or not, but I'm at the moment looking at an article in The Australian, but there were a few others around during the course of the last little while.
Mm. All right. So, what was it? Where's the website again, Dr. Ron?
It's MCTVIA, mctivia.com.au.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
www.stopforumspam.com. If you run a PHP bulletin board, which is...
I feel this is coming from the heart.
It is coming from the heart. Akin to Tech Talk Radio's web forum, for example, you might be interested in this website. Stop Forum Spam lets you record spammer usernames, IPs and email addresses if they're causing problems on your forum. Not only share it, but these guys make a number of APIs available, which means programmers can
API,
hook into
what does that stand for?
Application Programmer Interface.
Thank you. Acronym debunker.
So you can hook into their database when you're writing things for your forum, and you can use their data during the registration process on your forum. So if a spammer tries to register, then they can be refused.
Using, say, an email address that's known to have been a spammer on another system.
Exactly, yeah. Or an IP address used on another system. So it's a great little...
And have you been using it? And how's it work?
Works very, very well. It's good.
Okay, so you can see in your logs who's been declined membership access and spamming access?
All that sort of stuff. And you can have a look on their database and you can see who else has reported them and where in the world they're popping up.
Okay, so this works on any of the PHP BB ones.
Yeah,
for them, or can you hook it into any other sort of
If they've
form,
got APIs, you could, write an, you could write a hook in for any system.
That's correct. And there are other...
I'm just thinking people with their blogs, you know, when you want to get people... Because normally you have to publish a comment on a blog to stop spammers.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it supports blog connections natively, but have a look. There are other types of systems that
it
supports.
Given that their database appears to include the IP address that's the source of the comment, then yes, I don't see why it couldn't be used for that sort of thing.
Well, that's really good.
They currently have 7,222,303 spammer records in their database.
And it's
presumably growing every second.
Growing every single second.
All from .ru, I'd be tipping.
.cn?
From the Russian namespace, China namespace.
All over
the place. That's our website, Andrew. www.stopforumspam.com.
Tech Talk Radio App of the Week.
Becoming a regular contributor, the Renegade Fruit Loop says, Nokia Situations. This is our App of the Week.
I've got to write this down because you never tell me.
Oh, sorry. Nokia Situations. Yep. Renegade says, I would like to suggest a Symbian app, but I do realise that Nokia owners are a dying breed. So instead, I'd like to pose a search quest.
We're not dead yet.
Where I describe the app I'm currently using. And if either an Android or iPhone user on the panel could indulge me with an equivalent, it would help me decide which phone to upgrade to once my contract expires. The application is Nokia Situations. It's basically an application that sets up profiles on your phone with enhanced functionality. For example, I can set up a work profile where, say, the ringtone volume is lowered and it's activated automatically between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. on weekdays only.
That's cute.
I can also set up meeting profiles and they sync to my Nokia calendar during those times, for example. Anyway, you get the drift. Is there an Android or iOS app that does something like this? So that's the challenge.
Is it a rhetorical question? You got an answer for
no,
it or
not? Rhetorical. No? Well, I don't have an answer for it, but if there's anyone listening that knows it can help the Fruit Loop, then let us know. But
it's a great app, doesn't it?
It does. That's the App of the Week, Andrew, for Nokia, for Symbian. It's Nokia Situations.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
My, the meatloaf!
Bon. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Go for
Listener discretion is advised.
Go for it, Richard.
The outline of a phallus has been drawn in Texter on the lens of a Google Street View car. A number of streets in Maiden Gully and Long Gully, just outside Bendigo in regional Victoria, were photographed with the GTP, or green Texter phallus, superimposed on a number of images. Google, apparently oblivious, then published the images with the...
It had to happen only
with,
in Australia.
With GTP
it?
Overlay and no extra charge. Pranksters have been playing tricks on Google's Street View cameras ever since their launch in 2007. Google Street View, of course, lets users view 360-degree images at street level. A police spokesman from Bendigo, Sergeant Mark Holloway, said, told the Bendigo Advertiser it was a difficult offence to follow up and that police were yet to receive an official complaint from Google. And the, I can confirm, as of about an hour ago, the images are still online.
If really? You've checked, have you?
Yeah, some of the Street View images around Maiden Gully and Long Gully, just outside of Bendigo, you'll see a... green Texter outline on the on a lot of the street images.
I'm just imagining a person of said, finding, well, there's a Google car over there. Quick, give me your Texter. And up onto one of the cameras and
going,
doing some drawing on the camera, on the, on the lens camera.
Dr. Ron.
Yes, Graeme.
My elderly brother listens to this show. Can we make an effort to raise the tone of the Odd Spot, please?
You should have seen the Odd Spot that Andrew sent me. That's with tone raised.
And that is the end of the show. Hopefully we'll be back for our 350th show next week, all going according to plan.
As long as the ACMA doesn't take us off air.
Anyway, hopefully Lena will be back too if she's saved her documents from next week, if she's still talking to us after all those texts.
I hope so.
Yeah. All right, that's it for this week. It's been fun. Nice to have you back too, Dr. Ron.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
See you for the 350th next week. We'll have to go to the pancake parlour afterwards. Okay, see you. Bye.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graeme Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the two-hour version or access the one-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 8682 9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.